will call to order the House Committee on Veterans Affairs for the 26th of April. First of all, we're going to change this agenda a little bit. We're going to go to Senate Joint Memorial 1A as a work session, so I'm going to open a work session on SJM 1A.
Do you want me to read it?
Please.
Senate Joint Memorial, actually 1A2, urges the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to end veteran homelessness in 5 years and prevent future veteran homelessness through a combination of permanent supportive housing and transitional housing. We have an amendment 1-A2 that we need to adopt, and there is no fiscal and no revenue on this.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion on the proposed amendment for SJM 1A to make it SJM 1A2.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash 2 amendments to SJM 1A.
Chair Wick moves the amendments of 1A2 to Senate Joint Memorial 1A to make it Senate Joint Memorial 1A2. Boy, that's a fun deal, isn't it? No, we're making it better, folks, we think. So, anyway, any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Close the work session. No, I'll go ahead and entertain an amendment to send it to the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Joint Memorial 1A as amended with the dash 2 amendments to the House floor with a do pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Witt moves Senate Joint Memorial 1A2 as amended to the House floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Who would like to carry that?
Anyone? Carry it for you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Matthews would carry. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, we're going to switch the order a little bit. We're going to go to Senate Bill 809 as our first public hearing. So I will open up a public hearing on SB 809. Read it, please.
Senate Bill 809 designates February 24th of each year as Edward Dickinson Baker Day in Oregon.
Okay, we have, we'll call you up with three people at the first group of panel, and then we'll have two on the second panel. Steve Holgate, Steve Betchart, and Janice Williamson. Just for everyone's information, would you please turn off all your cell phones and electronic devices, as it does interfere with the recordings. See, everyone's digging in their pocket.
Good afternoon, Chair Esquivel, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Steve Holgate. Live in Portland. I come before you today in support of Senate Bill 809, which would establish a day of commemoration for Senator Edward Baker. There are few famous Oregonians. I tell my friends from other states that we prefer it that way. But maybe for that reason, it is all the more important to recognize those who gained fame in serving their country and our state. I don't suppose I have more standing than other Oregonians to speak in favor of this bill, except that my family has been in Oregon long enough to have supported Edward Baker's senatorial nomination. Whether they actually did or not is a question lost in the mists of history. I also occasionally portray Abraham Lincoln, Senator Baker's great friend, and have addressed the full House in this capacity a few years ago. As others will tell you, Edward Baker made a significant contribution to the earliest history of our state. He was one of our first senators, chosen by your predecessors in the Oregon State Legislature in 1860. He could have easily passed the war in the safety of the Senate chambers, and he had already proven himself in the Mexican War. But Senator Baker returned to the Army, took command of an infantry brigade while still serving as a senator, and was killed while leading it in one of the first, the brigade, that is, not the Senate, in one of the first battles of the Civil War. In the state that mourned his loss, he is remembered by such place names as Baker City, Baker County, and various Baker streets in towns throughout the state. I would like, however, to emphasize his closeness to perhaps the greatest of all Americans. It's often said that we are judged by the company we keep, and what better company could one keep than Abraham Lincoln? Though occasionally a political rival, Baker was perhaps Lincoln's closest friend. Lincoln named his first son after Baker and referred to Baker as a member of my family. Their closeness is attested by the fact that he passed the day before his death with Lincoln and his family, talking with Lincoln as an old friend, playing with his children. On his departure, Lincoln's wife, Mary, presented him with a bouquet of flowers. After his death, Lincoln's 9-year-old son, Willie, wrote a touching poem in his honor. Lincoln and his entire family went into deep mourning on Baker's death. One observer also wrote that in General Baker's death, Oregon has sustained an irreparable loss. By honoring him, we honor not only one of the most notable figures in the history of our state, but we honor, too, the spirit of Abraham Lincoln. Before I finish, I would like to also pay tribute to those who have worked so hard to bring this bill to this point, Mr. Greg Leo, Mr. Betchert, Ms. Williams, sons of the Union veterans have committed themselves to the memory of those who have served their country in our greatest and most tragic conflict. Their hard work in bringing recognition to those who served their country honors us all. In recognition, then, not only of Senator Baker, but of their admirable efforts, I urge the committee to approve this bill and send it to the full House.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Steve Betchert, and I am the commander of the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War Reserve, which is Edward D. Baker, and the 71st Pennsylvania Volunteer Infantry Company B, among other things. Today I would like to urge your support for this bill. Just over 2 months ago, I was walking the fields of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and just near the center of the Union line, between the famous grove or copse of trees and the bloody angle of the stone wall, stands a marker dedicated to the California Regiment, otherwise known as the 71st Pennsylvania Volunteer Infantry. There at the very center of the Confederate assault that's been misnamed Pickett's Charge stood 204 battle-hardened veterans who were the members of a unit that originally was 1,655 strong in 1861. When Senator Baker and his law partner, Isaac Wister, organized them. It was one of the probably the most dramatic military moments in our history, and it had a great deal to do with Senator Baker's efforts as a military personage and his influence as a political person. Members of the 71st helped to shore up the 4th U.S. Artillery Battery of Alonzo Cushing, worked his guns until he was killed, and then were part of the desperate counterattack against Confederate forces that actually broke through the middle of the Union line there momentarily. Then, along with other regiments in their brigade, they fought hand-to-hand, mortally wounding the Confederate leader, Louis Armistead, and driving the Southern forces back across the wall. But the price was high, 40% casualties for the 71st Pennsylvania, including 21 men and officers killed, 58 wounded. It was the last great offensive campaign for Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia and the high water mark of the Confederacy. Because of the recruitment efforts of Senator Baker and, as I said, his law partner, Isaac Wister, the regiment, they offered him a brigadiership, but he wouldn't take it because he didn't think that was right for a sitting senator to also be a general commissioned officer, a brigadier. So he remained as a colonel. But it was sustained. The regiment was sustained by Senator Baker. He personally paid for its first uniforms, gave it its initial training in drill and tactics. And because of his association with the state of Oregon, he attracted recruits like Captain of Company B, James W. Lingenfelter of Lane County, Eugene. Now, unfortunately, Captain Lingenfelter became the first of the regiment to lose his life in combat on September 21st, 1861, and one of the first Union soldiers to die in the Civil War. Senator Baker protected the new regiment because of his personal friendship with Abraham Lincoln until his untimely death, the senator's death at Ball's Bluff, Virginia, on October 21st. His efforts to maintain his position in the U.S. Senate while building this regiment and his sense of propriety and refusal to accept this Brigadier General's Commission while also serving in the Senate helped to cast the state of Oregon in a favorable light by association in the eyes of many Americans. It was only further enhanced by his personal courage in combat, which cost him his life. Even though he had from June of 1861 been convinced, or maybe even the word was obsessed, with premonitions of his own death in battle. So upon the 150th anniversary of the start of the American Civil War, I think it's altogether fitting and proper that we remember Edward Dickinson Baker and his impact on the state of Oregon and the military history of the United States in the course of a war which, in the words of historian Shelby Foote, changed this nation from the United States are to the United States is. I respectfully request your support on this bill. Thank you.
Co-chairs Esquivel, Witt, and other members of the committee, my name is Janice Williamson. 4065 Mandy Avenue, Southeast in Salem, Oregon. I'm the chairman of the Marion County Republican Central Committee. I come to ask you in favor of this hearing on SB 809. Edward Dickinson Baker was what today we would call an activist. He was into just about everything going on. Moving across the United States, he was in a variety of activities. As a young man in Illinois, he practiced law and developed his extraordinary oratory skills into a seat in the Congress of the United States, where he served as representative from 1845 to 1847. That is also where he began his very close friendship with Abraham Lincoln. Edward Baker, only 2 years older than Lincoln, had a lifelong friendship with Abraham Lincoln, so much so that Abraham Lincoln named a child Edward Baker after him. When he came back from the wars, from the Mexican War, he found Lincoln in the position, and he chose to move out of the city in order to keep from running against his good friend. Lincoln subsequently lost his race. Ever championing the cause of freedom and the Union and the abolition of slavery, Mr. Baker was involved as a volunteer leader in three wars, the Black Hawk, Mexican, and American Civil War, throughout his career. He was a statesman drawn to areas of conflict and growth, which brought him to California right around the time of the Gold Rush. As tales of his speech-making got around, he was asked to come to Oregon, where his oratory skill was needed to help establish the government here as part of the Union and to enter in the debates over the Pacific Republic. As a builder of the baby state of Oregon, he was elected to one of the first two United States Senate seats. When his friend Mr. Lincoln decided to run for the highest office in the land, Edward Baker campaigned hard for Lincoln in California and Oregon, and is credited with handing both California and Oregon for Lincoln. It was no surprise when Lincoln asked him to introduce him at the presidential inauguration in 1861. President Lincoln wasn't the only one who revered the dedication to service, although he did name his son after him. His tireless fight for abolition and his advocacy for the United States, the people of Oregon also named a city and a county after him. Senator and Colonel Edward D. Baker is the only sitting U.S. senator to ever be killed on the battlefield. He was killed at Ball's Bluff on October 20, 1861, in one of the very early battles of the Civil War, perhaps even the first one. The Senate honored him by having his body lay in state in the Senate chamber. In one of the early excursions of a dead body, he was shipped back to California, where he is buried at the Presidio. Baker was only 50 years old. February 24, 2011, marked the 200th anniversary of Colonel Baker's birth, and I think this is the perfect time to honor this great man who gave so much, not only for Oregon, but for the United States. Honor him. Please pass SB 809 through the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel?
Would like to add one thing. The Black Hawk War was a war, I believe, against Indians. And also, Gettysburg proved to be the started out as a skirmish between Buford's battalions, I believe, and ended up engaging the Confederacy. Buford took the high ground, waited for reinforcements, and in 3 days, over 51,000 Americans lost their lives in that one battle, the bloodiest battle in the history of this nation, because everyone on the battlefield was an American. Union troop strength was 95,000, Confederate troop strength was 75,000. After that, the South never smiled again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Greg Leo and Mark Stevens.
Here, Mark, let me squeeze over. Good afternoon. Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, my name is Greg Leo. For the record, 9318 Shampui Road in Aurora, past president of Sons of Historic Shampui. This is a great Oregon story about a great Oregonian, one who, of course, represented our state in the U.S. Senate, and one whose name is in the House Chamber. If you look at the Oregon House Chamber, kind of to the rear, to the right-hand side, you'll see Edward Baker's name. I first got interested in Edward Baker listening to Mark Hatfield speak about him. Just about every occasion, at the drop of a hat, Senator Hatfield would talk about Senator Baker. And Senator Baker has a lot to admire and a lot of stories that go forward to all Oregonians. He was an abolitionist. He was a strong advocate for statehood. He played a key role in our history, as Chair Williamson has said, at the discussion of the Pacific Republic. At a time when the United States was coming apart through secession, Oregonians, and specifically the Oregon legislature, took a hard look at giving up statehood only a year after we had come into the state. Baker, who had been recruited by the Oregon Republican Party to stump for Abe Lincoln, was up in Oregon and participated in that debate. And after the long road to statehood, could not see the people of Oregon giving back statehood at that time of kind of a critical national crisis. His oratory skills were fantastic, and frankly, it won his way to the U.S. Senate. At that time, Oregon had a senator who was our first senator who had retired, and Mr. Nesbitt and Senator Baker were elected to represent Oregon in the U.S. Senate. I've passed out three just interesting vignettes about Baker, because Baker tends to turn up in places in history which are really fantastic. First, there's a front page article in the Baker County Herald that really explains to the people of Eastern Oregon and Baker County their namesake and the importance of their namesake to Oregon history. The second story, which has come out of the Union Volunteer, tells a story of President Harry Truman, who, when told by General Marshall that Senator Baker's gravesite, and it actually was the site at Ball's Bluff where he was killed, was unkept, inspired Harry Truman to get into the car and drive up. First, he called Senator Morse. And he said to the senator from Oregon, "We have a noted Oregonian, a senator from Oregon, whose gravesite has been overgrown." And so he got Wayne Morse into the car, and this is apparently the last time a sitting U.S. president actually drove on a public highway. And Harry Truman and Wayne Morse drove to Leesburg, Virginia, where we were met by General Marshall, and then they proceeded to clear the what they thought was the gravesite, but was actually the site at Ball's Bluff where Senator Baker fell during the October 21st, 1861 battle. A fantastic and interesting story, and, you know, a story which shows that true greatness in American history and Oregon history is recognized regardless of political party by those of us who respect people who have ideals that are high, ideals like abolishing slavery, like keeping Oregon in the Union, like helping Oregon on the path to statehood. All of these things are something that Senator Edward Baker did in his life, and for that reason, we ask respectfully that Senate Bill 809 be given a due pass recommendation by this committee and sent to the floor of the House. I would also just like to mention for a moment the Sons of the Union Veterans of the Civil War, who have requested this bill along with the Baker County Historical Society. This is a hereditary group of Oregonians and Americans whose ancestors actually fought for the Union cause. And, you know, I personally am a member of the group as well. My grandfather spent a year and a half in Andersonville fighting for the cause of abolition and freedom. And these are veterans whose stories are somehow lost in the mists of time. And hopefully here on the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, we can recognize and honor their sacrifice to our country. And that's, I think, in large part the reason why we bring forward Senate Bill 809 on the 200th anniversary of Senator Baker's birth and the sesquicentennial of his death. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Stevens, 2025 Godsey Road, Dallas. I'm the current commander, Colonel Edward D. Baker Camp, Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War. And our members are, as Mr. Leo said, made up of primarily descendants of Union veterans, although we're not restricted to that, of the armies and navies of the United States during that 4 years of time. But we don't sit around and just tell stories about our grandfathers. We have a lot of activity going on, even out here in Oregon. One of the things we often hear when we give talks to groups is, well, what did Oregon have to do with the Civil War? Other than the fact we did have fortifications here that were staffed by Union troops for the entire war, Fort Hoskins, Fort Yamhill, Fort Stevens, and some in the eastern portion of the state. We also did contribute soldiers initially into the Baker Regiment. We also, after the war, received a great influx of veterans that following that conflict. Initially, we had identified, working with the Oregon Genealogical Society, 15,000 veterans here in Oregon. Since that time, we've been revising that number upward. Now we have pretty close to 20,000 veterans that resettled from the time of the end of the Civil War till the turn of the century. And those gentlemen are buried in Fall City, in Turner, several hundred in the Salem Cemetery, all over the state, and they built just about every political system, public building, educational system, anything you want to name, they had a tremendous influence on. And our group does a couple things. One of the most interesting is this graves registration, but since we started our camp several years ago as Edward Baker's using him as our namesake, we have identified 110 veterans that were buried in unmarked graves in the state, and we subsequently marked those graves, and we're still working on that process. Awful lot of state, awful lot of names, but we're checking every one. So that's kind of who our group is. Obviously, we're not just supporting this because of the Edward D. Baker as our namesake. We selected Edward D. Baker for a reason. He's very fundamental to the starting of our state, and he's I think, a classic example of what an American should look like, although he was born in England. I think he's just as much as American as so many other immigrants and so many other native borns we've had through our history. I think support of this bill would be a very great step to bring this more to the attention of the public so they learn that lesson that we got so many years ago. Thank you.
Any questions? Comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing. Anyone else would like to address the committee on this issue? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 3388. Open up work session.
That was Senate Bill 809.
I mean, 809. I'm sorry, I have the wrong piece of paper. 809. Let's retract that. I'll close it on Senate Bill 3388 and open it up again on Senate Bill 809. Sorry, folks. I want to close 809 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 809.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 809 to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Chair Witt moves Senate Bill 809 to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any comment? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Close the work session on Senate Bill 809. And who would like to carry this? Who would be honored? Okay. Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, that is if Greg Leo will write my floor speech.
There you go. Actually, I'll get you a history book because you're talking history. So, next, we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 275.
Senate Bill 275 requires the Board of Education of Community College District to develop standards for the community college to implement a process to give credit for education and training obtained by a person while serving in the United States Armed Forces. It directs the Board of Education of the Community College District in consultation with the Department of Veterans Affairs to develop methods for informing persons who served in the armed forces about potential credit for education and training. We did just get an amendment on this, -1, and that amendment changes it to the Department of Community College and Workforce Development shall develop standards. We have revenue on the -1, but not a fiscal.
Thank you. Director Willis, John Wyckoff, and Laura Carpenter. Director Willis.
Good morning, or good afternoon, Chair Esquivel and Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, I am Jim Willis, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 275. This bill originated from discussions held by the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Reintegration. The task force learned that while the Oregon university system had a standard way of applying military education, training, and skills for credit throughout their system, community colleges do not. Because Oregon's 17 community colleges are not a system, but individual schools operated by local community college boards, each community college decides individually how to apply a veteran's military education, training, and skills. One community college may give veterans 10 credits for their military education, while another may only give 3. Currently, there is no consistency in the system, thus no certainty for the veteran. This is especially difficult should the veteran transfer to the university system, which may have applied the military credits completely differently. It seems logical that all Oregon institutions of higher education, whether community college or universities, should have a standard way to evaluate and provide credit for military education, training, and skills. Senate Bill 275 attempts to address that issue. In its research, the task force was introduced to the American Council on Education, also known by the acronym ACE. This organization was created in 1942 to recognize the educational value of military training and experiences, and since that time, ACE has continuously evaluated military schools, correspondence courses, and occupations to determine the amount and level of academic credit each should be awarded. Through ACE, veterans can receive academic credit for most of the training they've received, including basic training. The ACE Military Evaluations Program is funded by the Department of Defense and coordinated through the Defense Activity for Non-Traditional Education Support. It is our belief that our veterans, especially our National Guard veterans, would benefit from community college using ACE to standardize the application of military education, training, and skills for credit within Oregon. The Oregon University System indicated during the interim that it already uses ACE as a standard practice. Senate Bill 275 is a partnership bill that will ensure veterans are treated the same no matter where they go to community college in Oregon. We are eager to work with the community colleges on this project and think that it will benefit the colleges as much as it will benefit the veterans. To that end, there is a Dash 1 amendment that the community colleges asked us to present. The Dash 1 states that the Community College and Workforce Development Department will take the lead on the project instead of each of the 17 community college boards. The community colleges felt this would be more workable, and we are happy to support the Dash 1 amendment. I'd like to thank the committee for its consideration of this bill and be happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you. Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association, representing Oregon's 17 community colleges. I want to just speak very briefly in support of House Bill 275 and then speak very quickly to the amendments. We do support this bill as a good, we think this is a good vehicle to continue a lot of the really good work that has been done at some of our colleges who have gone a bit, who are sort of ahead on this. Clackamas Community College, for example, has a grant, an ACE Walmart grant, to be able to connect these certifications and courses in the military to college credit at the community college level. And the example that was given in the Senate in testimony on this issue was, I mean, one example that Joanne Truesdell, the president of Clackamas, gave was water treatment was an example where there are many, many more military certifications and courses in the area of water treatment than Clackamas Community College, for example, has in their water treatment program. So the sort of part science, part art is connecting all of these different certifications and courses that are very specific to things you'll be doing in the military to credits in to college courses that you know, won't have the same title or numbering and that are in somewhat different, and trying to find appropriate ways to match. So we see this as a good way to kind of take those best practices and be able to use them across the colleges. We suggested the amendment because rather than doing this 17 times, it seemed more efficient to do what we're trying to do is get things standardized, and that doing it once was probably a better way to get it standardized. And with that, I will conclude.
Chair Esquivel and Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Laura Carpenter. I am a student at Portland Community College, and I am a veteran of both the war in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And I come before you today in support of Senate Bill 275. As the coordinator for my school's Student Veterans Association, I represent a student veteran population of people who have received training and education in the service that's entirely applicable to the civilian world. Members of the Signal Corps in particular, I was a psychological operations sergeant, and so I have a military transcript that says this should be worth this many college credits. The water treatment facility folks is a good example, and they come to the community college, and currently as it was already brought up, different schools have different ways of handling that credit. And this is all credit that is at the same educational standards as a community college regular courses are. And so by supporting this bill, you'd be supporting the veterans themselves who are transitioning from service member to student, and recognizing that the education that they received, the training that they received, and usually performed in real-world situations, is actually valuable. They don't have to go over and train it again. It also does a lot to eliminate efficiency for the school. There's no reason for the school to be focusing on giving people training that they already know how to do. It frees up those resources so that the schools can focus on providing the best education for all the student body. And it also eliminates inefficiency for the taxpayer. You know, there's no reason to pay for training people who already have the training just because someone hasn't figured out how to certify it on a piece of paper. This bill recognizes the accomplishments and the education that the people who serve their country and serve the state of Oregon overseas and in the military stateside have already received. It says this is valuable. It helps them complete their certificates of their two-year degree, their transfer degree, in a timely manner, get them into four-year institutions or back out into the workforce. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank the community college and the ODVA for supporting, for doing everything they can to support the student veterans population. And I urge you to support Senate Bill 275. Thank you for your time.
Senator.
Thank you, Chair Esquivel. I want to thank everybody that has worked on this, and I can't even begin to probably name names for those that worked on it. As Chair Witt and I have worked on Workforce Development Committee over the years, we've dealt with the 40-40-20, trying to get more people degreed, skilled up. We had conversations about what could be the low-hanging fruit out there. And I talked to Commissioner Preuss about this concept, and it's just a good feeling when you've talked about something a few years down the road, you know, the work has been done, and this is the product that comes out of it. It just makes sense. But I do have one question, if I may, Mr. Chair. One thing I didn't hear in the testimony, and it was something that I had talked to Commissioner Preuss about a few years ago, and that was, would there be a cost per credit, or how would that handled, or do you even know yet how that'll be handled? If I come and my military police experience and training is worth X credit hours, do I pay for that? Do I pay a discounted rate for that? It has value, and I mentioned to Commissioner Preuss, as a veteran, I would consider paying because it does have value. I don't consume seat time, and so maybe it's not a $70 per credit hour fee, but maybe it's $30, and so I didn't know if that had been considered or not.
Chair Esquivel, Representative Huffman, I'll have to get back to you on how the colleges or on whether the charges are assessed. I honestly don't know the answer for each college. We do have a president here in the room and someone from CCWD, but I can certainly get back to you with that information.
I would just follow up. I would just say that I would have no problem. As I mentioned, my conversation with Commissioner Preuss a few years ago had even recommended that might be a way for community colleges to have a small funding stream without really at detriment or at an expense to the veteran, because it's definitely providing a good value, if you will. Anyway, just some food for thought.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while on that note, and thanks for bringing that forward, and maybe Mr. Willis would know the answer, can current veterans' benefits be used? Would they be eligible to be used for not necessarily class seat time, but credit purchase?
Chair Esquivel and co-chair or co-vice chair Matthews, I don't believe it can. No,
I don't think so either.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laura, thank you very much for your military service. It sounds like it was rather extensive. And your statement was excellent testimony. I don't know whether you have taken any advanced educational courses or not, but if you have or if you haven't, could you maybe reflect on what this bill, the difference that it might make to someone like yourself coming back from two separate theaters of war?
Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, yes. I think, so a lot of what I've been talking about is just the fact that it does just make sense and it's an efficiency issue. But to be perfectly honest, I think there's also an element of it says to the veteran who's making that transition, you know, what you did and what you worked at is valuable. We aren't just going to say, hey, thanks for serving your country, but now you have to start over from square one. To people who have a lot of valuable experience, you know, these are people who have been working in a job, and not just a job, but a hard job for years at a time, usually. And for them to come home and say, well, we're going to tell you that you have to go through a course again, even though it seems like kind of a minor thing. I think a lot of times veterans are already in the position where they feel like the civilian world doesn't necessarily recognize their experiences. And to say to them, well, you know, just because you've been doing this for years, just because you did it in a war zone, doesn't mean we're going to recognize that you've ever done it before. And so, I mean, I think that's part of it, honestly, is just recognizing the accomplishments of the people who did serve their country and who served the state of Oregon in the National Guard. I think that's, and it just makes sense. It's just silly. It's just a waste of money to train the same person for the same thing twice. But.
Thank you very much. That was very well put. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Chairman.
And thank you for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Laura, thank you for your service, too.
Thank you.
I think that this is a common sense issue. When I was in college the second time and out to here at 8.5 months pregnant with my first child and racing the clock to graduation time, I was shocked to see that I had missed a class that was required for graduation. And it was a class, and I don't know, I was getting a psychology degree. It was something, making a point, teaching something to someone who knew nothing about it. And it's one of those esoteric college courses where you have to find a problem, solve it all on paper, and you have 4 hours to do it. So I took it, the challenge, instead of taking the class. And so I took my 4 hours, and in 2 hours and 15 minutes, I wrote how to capture a swarm of bees. And got an A.
Right, very carefully.
Very carefully. I got an A, and I, you know, it's just something pregnancy does to you. It forces you to be very creative.
Wow.
But it was something I had done about some months before, because I used to keep bees, and it was really a challenge. I looked at this whole audience of people, and that everybody's in this room taking this challenge of, instead of sitting through 10 weeks of a course that most of us were, you know, at the end of our time and ready to graduate, but had missed, or sometimes you just can't fit them in, whatever. Anyway, it didn't happen. Or the credit didn't transfer from University of Washington, which was where I started.
Right.
But anyway, the point was exactly what you've made. It makes sense. It's a way that we can get the credit for something else. I'm not suggesting you spend 4 hours and do all that, but however you do it. Just
I don't actually know how to trap a swarm of bees.
I'll give you my paper. But it's something that we can do for our students and also our university systems. And, you know, it just makes sense. You're absolutely right. It's a common sense approach to this.
Anything else? Thanks again, and thank you, and welcome home.
Thank you very much.
We have an Emma Calloway.
Hello, Co-Chairs Esquivel and Witt. Thank you very much for having me today. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. And yesterday, hundreds of students came to the Capitol from community colleges and universities, and many of them had a chance to speak with some of you about this important bill. And so I wanted to just testify quickly that the Oregon Student Association and the Oregon Community College Student Association, as you just heard, do support this bill, and we represent hundreds of thousands of students in public education across the state. And so we support this bill for a number of reasons. We first believe that this helps to acknowledge the training and knowledge of student veterans. We think that this helps student veterans move through school, which is a really important part of the 40-40-20 plan, as Representative Huffman spoke to, but also as helping students in general see post-secondary education as an option for them. We also believe that student veterans' years of training and valuable life experience should equate to a college credit the same way we have many creative classes around the state that place practicum experiences with college credit, and we believe that what better practicum than military service and specialized training. Thank you very much to Laura Carpenter, who spoke. We believe that type of experience should be more than valued, and we do really support this bill. And finally, not always most important, but this bill does help to make the best use of our investment and our tax dollars that we've placed in the veteran community. And so we believe that that's another way to help educate more people with the same amount of dollars or the far reduced revenue we have in the state right now. This just seems efficient and a wonderful idea. So I turned into committee two student testimonies that are different than my own. Those students couldn't be here today, but they very much support this bill and wanted an opportunity to share that information with you and their experience. That's all I have to say, but please vote yes on Senate Bill 275. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to recognize the fact that, as far as I know, Emma and anyone else who's associated with the Oregon Student Association, you do so on a voluntary basis. I'm sure it took a considerable amount of resources, given the cost of gasoline and everything else these days, for you to be here, to be present, to testify on this bill on behalf of veteran students. And I want to recognize the efforts that you've made and thank you ever so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you. Is there anyone from the department here from Community College and Workforce Development? Would you please come forward, please?
I think we have to ask the question if it's okay with them.
Yeah. Chair Escobar, my name is Carissa Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development.
Now, my question is, we have a dash one that puts this in your court. If so, are we all on board with that? And the second question is, would it change the fiscal one iota?
Chair Escobar, members of the committee, our opinion is it would be more coordinated if it went through our department, because we work with all 17 community colleges in a coordinated fashion all the time. Easier for us and Department of Veterans Affairs to oversee this and work with one community college at a time. Not that it will make it easy. There's work to be done, but a lot of this work is in process already. We do have a fiscal impact on this for the impact to our staff and the time that it will take for our staff to be working with the community colleges. We got the request for the fiscal impact statement this morning, so it wasn't prepared in time for this hearing.
You said it was in progress already. Why would it have any additional fiscal on it if we're doing it already?
Representative Escobar, sort of a mixed question, I guess, an answer, because there have been so many cuts to what we can do, and this is we're reevaluating how much capacity our staff has to take on the numerous bills, reports, task force that are being required. So we see that we have quite a few that are minimal, and they're starting to add up. And so there is, in some place, it, there is a fiscal impact. There's going to be a shift in work. We do work with the community colleges. This is going to be additional work as they evaluate where they are. Some of our smaller community colleges don't have the capacity in their staff to do this work. So it's, we believe that there is going to be fiscal impact to do more of that work with them to get it done more quickly. With the cuts in funding, this is work we're committed to doing. The community colleges are committed to it. We may think it may take longer. If they don't have staff to focus on it, if we don't, it's just one more of their many, many duties.
So you're going to have to hire someone?
We don't know. It depends what gets out of this legislative session on the numbers. It could, It could be we may have to have some help on a personal services contract to hire someone, yes, but we're not sure. We don't know how this is going to come out.
Okay. Yes.
I haven't read the bill. I was excited about the concept, but I haven't read the bill. Is there, kind of back to my question with Director Willis and John, is there anything that you know of in the bill that would prevent community colleges being able to adopt rules to be able to, so that your rule writing around this would almost be an investment, so that community colleges could charge a reasonable fee for the credit hours? Do you know if there's anything in the bill that would prevent that from happening? Because, again, back to my conversation 3 or 4 years ago with the commissioner, my intent was to help the veterans and community colleges at the same time, knowing that community college funding gets hit all the time. It was a way, I thought, of not having to fill seat time but be able to generate some revenue and get a degree in there at the same time.
And Representative Witt, Representative Huffman, I'm not sure whether there's a fee connected to this right now or not. There could be a fee for a transcripting charge. For evaluating experience, I believe there is a fee, and it would be in doing and being in a class that does, for instance, a portfolio of experiences, so it can be documented what has been learned. So I don't think that there's anything that prevents that in the way the bill is written.
Thank you. And I just want to go on the record again stating clearly that I would support community colleges being able to build in some sort of a reasonable per credit hour fee. Community colleges don't have an application fee, is my understanding. But if, I know that you're hurting, your 17 community colleges are hurting for money, even though we're working with the Higher Ed Subcommittee or the Education Subcommittee trying to get the funding up, but the jury's out on that. But I would think it would be reasonable, and I would think that it would be a value for veterans to be able to invest in their future by doing that. So I would like to look at this maybe as more of an investment in the rule writing and stuff, especially if we left the door open for community colleges to be able to charge for those credit hours.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further? Representative Matthews, please.
My only further comment would be that I appreciate your thought process on this, Representative. I think you're on the right track. I would hate to see us do nothing or get caught up in a fiscal that ends up killing a bill opportunity when we have so much at stake here. There, we received a letter from a veteran student who had said that this would correct correct the problem. And it may from day forward, but there's a lot of veterans that have a great deal of experience that have already now underemployed themselves, I guess, because they weren't counted as having meaningful experience. And so I just hope that whatever it is that we decide or whatever comes out of those fiscal analysis is that we take in the opportunity as well, such as Representative Huffman said, maybe there's a fee that goes with these. And it wouldn't be unheard of to say, X amount of credits cost this much money in reviewing your transcript. I just would hope that that we're all committed to getting this bill out so that we can get something moving in this direction, because for far too long, and I'm an example of somebody who doesn't have that education background, but I have a great deal of experience that I think translates nicely into a lot of different fields. And it would sure be nice if I was able to sit down with Mountain Community College, where I have hours, and say, here's my DD-214, here's my experience, here's what I've done. I'd like to convert that into further hours. So I hope we can get there. And I appreciate what you're saying as an agency. We ask a great deal of all agencies, and you don't get the funding every year either. But at some point, we really have to move this and make this work. It's just imperative for veterans. But thank you.
Representative Matthews, there is quite a bit of work happening at Clackamas, and you've heard about that already. And some of the community colleges, they're waiting to see what that process is, because what happens there can be replicated at the other colleges. So it's the work to make that happen. So I think we're positioned well to do this, and there is agreement. It's a matter of so we can do it most efficiently.
And just a quick follow-up to that, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I agree 100%. My fear is that Clackamas is doing something, therefore Mount Hood might do something different, therefore another community college is going to do something different. You could have 17 community colleges committed to the program, all operating independently, and the inconsistencies there for the veterans to cause a great deal of frustration in what that really means. So that's why I think it's important that those Dash 1 amendments are there. I appreciate where your agency's at. I think we'll hear on another bill that there's been some frustration as well, and look forward to that conversation too. So thank you very much.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That brought up the question. We passed a bill yesterday. I think it was the Student Bill of Rights. That's not the correct name, but it's...
You passed a bill, Representative. Go ahead.
The body passed a bill yesterday that would add continuity to the higher ed system, so that four-year universities would accept credit hours from community colleges, and this four-year university would accept the hours from that four-year university. I assume this will be part of that conversation too, so that if Representative Matthews goes to Mount Hood Community College and sits down and is awarded 20 credit hours or whatever for experiential credit, that if he chooses to go on and work on a degree at, I'm sorry, Representative, would it be OSU or U of O? You take your pick. Huffman University.
That
those credit hours, as assessed by ACE or however it's done, that those credit hours would apply to a baccalaureate or whatever. I just thought about that when the representative was talking, and I want to make sure that we know that that bill did pass the House. Who knows where it's going to go and end up, but I think that's, I just wanted to get on the record, that needs to be a critical part of the conversation, that these hours would be transferable.
Representative Huffman, what ACE has is a guide to the evaluation of experiences in the armed services to do exactly what you're saying, so that there's a standard reference that recognizes the acquired learning in the military. So our work is to make sure that it is standard throughout the community colleges, that they apply it in the same way and they understand it in the same way. And so this is specific to military to answer the question you're asking to be yes.
Thank you.
And for the record, we did pass that bill, Representative. Yes, you're correct. I was mistaken about the high school bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Matthews. Representative Matthews, I maybe was reading too much into your comments, but I was sensing that there was a concern about whether this credit was conferred at no cost to the veteran versus they're paying for the college credits. Was that
just
part and parcel of your...
Thank you for that. I just, you know, the question to Director Willis was, you know, will current veterans benefits pay for these credits if we were to charge? And the answer, which is what I believe, was no, they wouldn't. But we're still saying that it wouldn't be unreasonable to have that, you know, a fee for that credit transfer. I think that is reasonable, but it should be a reduced rate as compared to the student that occupies space in the class and time from an instructor.
Thank you very, very, very much for that. And I'm curious. It says that minimal fiscal impact.
That's before the dash one.
Before the dash one. Okay. All right. Fine. That clarifies that as well. Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Thank you so very, very much. Is there anyone else who would like to testify at this time on Senate Bill 275? Any members of the public? Not seeing any. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 275, and I'm going to open a work session strictly committee members for the consideration of the Dash 1 amendment. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 275. Committee members, we have a Dash 1 amendment, I would be open to a motion if that's your pleasure.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Matthews, please.
I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 275.
Thank you. Representative Matthews moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 275. Discussion on the motion? Not seeing any? Not hearing any. Is there any objection to the motion? Motion passes. And I am going to close the work session on Senate Bill 275. Thank you very much, committee members. And with that, hold on, folks, while the chair catches up with the paperwork here. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 338. Jill, if you would please tell us what that bill is about.
Senate Bill 338A establishes a task force on tuition waivers for veterans at community colleges. It requires the task force of community college district presidents to address policy development and consistency in community college tuition waiver for children, spouses, and surviving spouses of deceased and disabled veterans. Directs the task force to submit a report to the Legislative Assembly before convening of the 2012 Legislative Assembly. It has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage. There is a fiscal statement issued. It has no revenue impact.
Thank you very much. And the first witness I'm going to call forward, please, is Robert Thornhill. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
And I'm glad to be able to meet you personally. You're quite a writer. So thank you for all the background information that you've provided me. I've appreciated that very much. Please, for the record, state your name and proceed.
Thank you very much, sir. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Thornhill. I appear before you in support of Senate Bill 338A. In doing so, I represent members of VFW Post 1442. I've submitted written testimony. With your permission, I'll read a summary of that testimony.
Please.
Next to the service members themselves, no one has sacrificed more for America's causes than the children and spouses of deceased and severely disabled American veterans. In recognition of their sacrifices, in 2008, the Oregon legislature enacted the tuition waiver program. The gift from the people of Oregon will not bring back nor make whole their loved ones. It will, however, give the children and spouses involved a chance at an education they might not otherwise be able to achieve. Moreover, it assures the service member going to war that should the worst happen, at least a down payment has been made on the education of his or her children. One less distraction from the immediate task of soldiering. Heretofore, community colleges have been exempted from this program based on indications of their association that the colleges would voluntarily establish programs comparable to that required by law. The colleges had 3 years to live up to that promise. As indicated in my written testimony, few of the 17 community colleges have kept the promise. For example, according to the association's report to this 76th assembly, during the last 3 years, only 8 of the 17 community colleges have granted waivers of tuition. And there's an extremely wide disparity in the numbers granted by those eight. Columbia Gorge, for example, has granted 21 waivers, whereas Portland Community College, the largest of the colleges, granted only two. The monetary value of the waivers varied, too, from an average of only about $300 to over $2,600. In their pleas for exclusion, the association has argued that the autonomy of district college boards to set policy within their respective districts is paramount and should be respected. I believe there are higher principles involved. In addition to the simple principle of keeping one's word is the principle of equity, that is, equal treatment of like-situated citizens. A child of a 100% disabled soldier in College District A, for example, should be treated as the same as a child of a 100% disabled veteran soldier in District B. As shown in my written testimony, that is clearly not the case at present. There is a wide disparity of treatment between the districts. Community colleges are public institutions no less than the universities. They should be required by law to participate in this investment in the education of Oregonians who have sacrificed much for the country. For a variety of reasons, many students prefer to at least start their post-secondary education at the community college level. The students involved in this program should be given the option of a community college. Oregon needs the graduates of both. Therefore, I recommend approval of Senate Bill 338. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. And from the members of VFW Post 1442, thank you very much for the hard work you do here in Salem. I'll be pleased to try to answer any question you might have.
Any questions? This representative.
I just want to make a comment, and thanks. You're doing your VFW Post real well, Mr. Thornhill, and it's a pleasure to see you again. And we've had chats in the past and haven't always gotten along, but we've always respected one another. And I appreciate the job you're doing in informing us of your positions on these things. I agree. I've had a conversation with community colleges a little earlier. We're going to hear them tell us how they're trying, but I love the fact you put together some really strong documents and numbers that give us kind of a good broad look at this throughout the state. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Yes, Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Thornhill, as I said earlier, you are not only a prolific writer, but you're also a very good writer. And I don't know whether your military service had anything to do with your writing talents, but we have traditionally encouraged folks that appear before our committee to tell us a little bit about your military career and just what you did.
I'm a high school dropout from Oklahoma to escape the farm and to do my duty. And it was the duty and is the duty of young people to answer their nation's call. I joined the Navy, went into the submarine service, spent 5 years in the submarine service, got out of the submarine service in Honolulu, Hawaii, enrolled in the University of Hawaii, and I was given college credits for some of my military service, 6 hours if I recall. But I wound up with a scholarship from the Japanese Ministry of Education. I got my degree from Jochi Daigaku Jesuit University in Tokyo, Japan. The scholarship ran out. I got hungry, and I became a Department of the Army civilian. My first duty station was in Saigon. I spent a couple of years there, a couple of years next door, 5 years next door in Thailand, Vietnam, Germany. Uncle Sam has been awful good to me, very good. I was able to serve in at least a dozen countries, temporary duty in another dozen. So I've been well rewarded. I'm very grateful for it all. And again, I thank you guys for what you do.
Well, through the chair, Mr. Thornhill, that is a very interesting story. And I think it's a rather amazing commentary that it appears relatively easy move from warrior who was fighting against one nation to a civilian who embraced the country and its people and its educational system that you formerly fought against and went on to become a highly educated individual. That is an absolutely heartwarming story. Thank you for that, and thank you for your service as well.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Thank you all.
Any other questions? Thank you. Next is Andy Smith. Why don't you join him, Mac?
Sure. My name is Matt McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon. Basically, this 338A came about because of 3 years of frustration with the community colleges not following what was asked, what the university system has embraced. And on lines from line 12 to 14 are the most important lines in the bill, because that what it does is say that the community college hopefully will get everything together so they act as one in allowing tuition waivers for dependents of those killed in action and dependents of those 100% disabled, and request that the bill be approved.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Esquivel and Witt. For the record, Andy Smith, legislative aide for Senator Haas. Senator Haas would have liked to have been here himself, but he's over in the Education Committee right now. So the last two gentlemen gave some of the reasons for Senate Bill 338. In its original form, it came about because Senate Bill 1066 was passed several years ago, and that law had a policy that if a loved one was killed in action, that their survivors would be guaranteed a university education on the state of Oregon. So at the time, the community colleges stepped in and said, hey, wait a minute, we're a little bit different than the universities. We have a different organizational structure, and we'd like to implement the policy on our own. And so the legislature said, fine, go ahead and do that. And over the last several years, some veterans groups have raised some concerns that you just heard. And just a few weeks ago, we had a hearing on this bill over in Senate Education, and it was very emotional and very intense. And we had veterans on both sides of the issue. And on top of that, the community colleges testified that they were doing their best to implement this policy. So the committee was a little bit at a loss of what to do. And then Senator Morse came forward with the bill that you see in front of you today. And now in its current form, it says to the community college presidents, you know, you got till February to figure this out and then come back to the legislature then. And if we don't like it, then we're going to take the original Senate Bill 338 and have it ready to go. So thank you for considering this issue. And if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks both of you for being here, and thanks for the kind of the brief explanation, because I had heard about the Senate committee hearing and thought that there were some issues there, and I really do believe that, and I'm not a huge fan of task force unless they're going to be efficient and effective, but I do believe that it's needed to get everybody in a room to figure out what this is going to look like, because in the end, we all want the same thing. I don't think anybody's been opposed or against helping our veterans, but it has been since 2008, and it's time that we get this straightened out. So appreciate you bringing this forward, and thanks again for your testimony. And Mac, you do a lot of battle in here, and we appreciate that. Thanks for looking out for everybody and being a part of the good spirit of debate. So thanks for being here.
I have one question. Was it raised in the other committee? Were you in the committee meeting?
I was, yes.
Over in the Senate side. Did they talk about a time frame for this to sunset for dependents and or in case a spouse remarried?
Co-Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, I don't recall a discussion of a sunset. The timeline that I remember in the discussions was that, you know, you had 3 years to figure out this policy. Apparently,
No, I think you're misunderstanding me. My wife was a KIA. How many years do I have to go to school? Is there a sunset on that time frame?
Chairman Esquivel and members of the committee, yes, sir.
The shortest one was 7 years, which meant if you had a young child, they'd never realize the tuition waiver. And it varied. And then some of the community colleges in their policy papers said that they could cancel it at any time.
That's in the engrossed? Okay. I didn't see that, Mac. I just read about
the community colleges. Each one has a policy paper put out on this particular item.
Did I miss that or what? Because I'm not... I may have missed that, Mac. I don't see that in the...
Well, in reading, you have to read each of the policy papers, sir, in order to pick up on what the exemptions were from what...
Representative Matthews.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. What you're getting at is it's not in the bill itself. It's in the policy statements from the 17 community colleges.
That's correct.
Okay, because, see, I'm concerned with the bill only. That's what I'm concerned with. So, okay. So it has to do with the community colleges?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Any other questions?
Thank
you. Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was looking at that, too. But I have been telling people that this was one of the things we did. And so I hope this gets resolved sooner than later because people were very excited about this and this option and this opportunity.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. John Wyckoff and John Turner. And Director Willis, we're saving the best for last.
Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the Legislative Director for the Oregon Community College Association, representing Oregon's 17 community colleges. I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd also like to start by thanking Senators Morris and Haas for working a compromise that I think will accomplish what a lot of the advocates are looking for and gets the community colleges and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs together to sort of work through a lot of the issues that I think that might have been what was lacking in this process so far, is that some of these issues that were needing to be worked through, there wasn't really a forum to do so, and that wasn't happening. But I want to just walk through a bit of kind of the history of how we got here and what the colleges have done. I think because this really goes back before there was legislative action to 2005, when Governor Kulongoski informally asked all the colleges to provide, or asked the colleges to provide a benefit to spouses and dependents of deployed veterans. And at the time, many of the colleges did include a tuition waiver for fallen soldiers. One of our colleges included a 50% tuition waiver for the spouse of anyone currently deployed, regardless of whether that person was injured. And so the colleges have really been committed to serving veterans and have been in a number of ways. And this was part of a larger program at all of the campuses. And again, all of the campuses had some form of benefit. In 2008, when members of the VFW and other advocates had come and asked for this tuition waiver program, we said at the time, you know, we do tuition at the local level by locally elected boards. We aren't like the Oregon University system in that way, where tuition is set by one board at the state level. And so we would like the opportunity to implement similar programs on each of the 17 campuses at the local level where those decisions are made. We believed it was consistent with the work that the campuses were already doing. So the colleges didn't have a concern about implementing the program, but didn't want to upset what had been the historic traditional balance of where tuition policy was set. And at that time, we were asked to do a tuition waiver for, in the case of fallen soldiers, and for soldiers, for spouses and dependents of fallen soldiers, 100% disabled, and a third part, which is the piece that most commonly got missed in the policies that were enacted, which was died as a result of service-related injury. And that was pretty uniformly missed in the policies. And quite frankly, I think when we're looking at putting together a task force where the college presidents and ODVA are at the same table, those are the kinds of things that would get flagged and say, hey, there's a third element of this you all have missed, because it certainly wasn't intentional that piece was missed. That was one of the major ones. In 2009, that and some other issues came forward. One of the issues that came forward is some of the colleges did sort of sunset spousal benefits, as I think that you were getting to. The other was that the policies aren't uniform, that there is some variation in each policy. We have since created a template policy for every campus that every campus has agreed to, so that there is a uniformity, so that a veteran going from one campus to a different campus isn't going to see a different set of rules. We have in that uniform policy have looked at a 10-year sunset for spousal benefits. These are the kinds of conversations that I think that we're open to continuing to have if folks feel that that isn't enough, that those are the kind of conversations we could have with the ODVA in this forum. But the colleges are all working toward creating something that's uniform. And one of the other concerns that we were hearing was that the programs weren't necessarily visible on a website, and so that's another one of the comments that has come back. I want to just very quickly read to you, because I think there's been a misunderstanding or a belief that the colleges just simply didn't enact anything. And what they did is everybody by 2009 had partially enacted this program, believing that they had done what they were supposed to have done. All had, by 2009, had the piece for fallen soldiers. Almost all had disability. Some defined it a bit differently, and that was one of the issues that we're saying, okay, we'll make that all uniform. But I just want to read from, I mean, here's a good example from Rogue Community College District. It's marked Agenda Item 7D, and background information, this is what went to the board. It just discusses the process that they went through as they dealt with changes. Some of the changes that have been made were also things like the veterans group said when the first, in 1066, when we look at Senate Bill 1066, House Bill 1066, when this first came up, it was September 11th, 2001 and forward, that those were the folks that would be eligible. In 2009, we were asked to remove that. So some of this has come because what was being asked in the program did change, and they were asking for a more robust program. So you'll see that a lot of the colleges went back and then made changes like that. And it was sort of, I think, getting all the changes at all the 17 colleges that didn't happen consistently, and I think that this creates a process. But I just want to read this paragraph because I think it shows you what the colleges, and this is similar at every campus, had gone through. This is background information to the Rogue Community College District Board. In 2008, the legislature adopted SB 1066 mandating tuition waivers for dependents and spouses of fallen and 100% disabled soldiers. The waivers applied to the Oregon University System and Oregon Health Sciences University. Community colleges were removed from the bill with the understanding that colleges could adopt such a program at the local level. Accordingly, the RCC board approved a tuition waiver for dependent and fallen Oregon service members at its September 6, 2008 meeting. In 2009, two bills were introduced expanding the waiver program, therefore mandating a need to amend the tuition waiver to remove the September 11, 2001 eligibility date specified and a requirement specifying dependent children must apply for the waiver by the time they turn 23 years of age. The RCC Board of Education adopted the aforementioned revisions May 19, 2009. In 2011, and it goes on to talk about more changes that we were asked to make in 2011. My point in reading that is all of the colleges were engaged in a process of trying to respond as they heard issues and implement this program. There was not an attempt to not do so, and I think that shows pretty clearly a campus trying to go through that. But we're comfortable with the suggestion and with the language that the Senator Morris brought forward through the Senate Education Committee that gets everybody down at the same table to talk about how to make this uniform, how to align it as closely as possible with the OUS waiver program, and gets us in a conversation with ODVA so we can work through some of these issues. Now, we will be seeking an amendment that that we all have agreement on that would specify that we're only talking about this tuition waiver program. We think in the current language it would actually apply. We would have a task force on all veterans programs, and that it currently actually tells us to align all veterans programs to those that OUS has. Well, as for institutions, I mean, that encompasses a lot, and they have some programs that we just simply won't have, and probably vice versa. So we want to make sure that it's clear we're talking about the tuition waiver program, and we want to make it explicit that the task force or conversation will be in consultation with ODVA, which is not explicit right now. And the colleges and the Department of Veterans Affairs, I don't want to speak for them, I think agree that those changes are worth having. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions. And with me also is President John Turner from Vermont, who will also speak to this issue.
Go ahead, Mr. Turner.
Thank you, Chair Esquivel. Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name's John Turner, and I'm the president of Blue Mountain Community College. And it may not surprise you that I have a slightly different perspective on our journey towards granting these waivers over the last 5 or 6 years. Prior to coming to Blue Mountain Community College in 2003, I spent 28 years active duty in the U.S. Marine Corps, retiring as a colonel. During that time frame, I deployed all over the world, twice to combat zones, had the privilege of leading Marines in combat. So may not surprise you that I'm somewhat pro-veteran, lifetime member of the VFW, lifetime member of the Military Officers Association, lifetime member of the Marine Corps Association. I work at a campus that is pro-veteran. We like veterans. We've worked very hard to serve veterans. We were one of the first ones in 2005 to put programs in place, not just for fallen veterans, but to reduce the tuition or waive it completely for deployed service members from our service district. And we give a half tuition waiver to spouses of deployed service members. So we've been working on this quite a while, and we're very proud of what we've done. BMCC has been named a military-friendly institution. We're working with the American Council on Education to transcript credits. We started a veterans club. So at the college. So a lot of great things are happening at Blue Mountain Community College for veterans and have been for a number of years. Governor Kulongoski asked us to consider all of us, all 17 of the community colleges, to what we could do to grant waivers for fallen service members, their dependents, and spouses, which we voluntarily did. By 2009, all 17 had a policy in place. They did this voluntarily because we felt it was the right thing to do. Last year, after hearing complaints from Oregon's Veterans Associations that our policies were not uniform across the state, we again voluntarily made more changes to try and make them more uniform. And I will grant that right now they are not 100% precisely uniform across the state. But like at my college, some of them are much more generous than what the OUS grants. So now I understand that there's a cry for legislative action to get all the state's community colleges to support veterans in the same precise manner. I'm a little bit disappointed that the veterans groups are lobbying directly to the state government rather than try and resolve this at the local level. I've yet to hear any of the veterans groups acknowledge the fact that the community colleges have been in the forefront of granting veterans waivers far beyond what's being granted for fallen veterans and disabled veterans. And I also want to say I don't think every issue in the life of our state needs to be resolved by passing a law. I think that we can work this out. If this panel decides to vote for this, we will comply with a smile on our face, but I think you're going to see us do it anyway without the passage of this law. So that's my testimony, and I'm ready to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, you had mentioned Governor Kulongoski. Did this originate with the legislature, state legislature, a federal ruling, or Governor Kulongoski's request for the university system and community colleges to provide this benefit to dependents?
Chair Esquivel, Representative Huffman, it began as an informal conversation by the governor. I believe he may have come to our president's council and asked that the colleges do this, and all the colleges began implementing some form of process. And then it became what was asked for in 2008 was much more specific because it was in bill form and it asked for a very specific waiver program. And so in 2008 it became a much more specific ask.
Follow up. So there's no federal guidance or mandate. This is an Oregon program?
Chair Esquivel, Representative Huffman, there is not a federal mandate one way or the other that we do this or that college districts do this. And so, you know, many states don't, I don't know. I don't know who does and who doesn't, but there is no uniform federal standard that we do this.
Follow up. Does this bill do any more than set up a task force and ask CCWD to I'm assuming it's CCWD and not the individual community colleges, set up a task force and ask for you to work out uniform details, or does it get into specifics about what you are to provide in the form of free tuition? What does it do?
Chair Esquivel, Representative Huffman, what it does additionally is ask us to align our programs with the Oregon University System program on this tuition waiver. And so that specific language isn't specific, but the Oregon University System modeled their program after the language in 1066, and so there are specifics to that. Having said that, that is what the colleges were all attempting to model, was to reach what those had come to. So we were comfortable with that. And what the way the Oregon University System implemented it came out of an agreement that we all had made in February of 2008. And so those are parameters with which the colleges were all comfortable. But the actual language in the bill simply says to align to what the Oregon University System waiver is.
Just a comment then. And I appreciate what you've done. It's awful easy for groups or the legislature to say, we want community colleges to do this, we want the university system to do that. On the alignment, I think I've worked in education and workforce development enough to know that alignment is not as easy as saying you guys go forth and align, because you have 17 separate community colleges, you have OUS system, separate budgets, separate boards, separate directors, separate goals in many cases. I would agree with the president that I prefer to see this stuff done outside of the legislature. Don't think it's necessary. One of my big concerns, and I understand that you guys have already started down this road, but in this legislative session alone, there have been probably no less than three separate bills asking community colleges to provide free tuition or extending some sort of free service or extended service to one group or another. And with funding to community colleges and OUS going down, I'm concerned. I said the other day in a hearing, maybe it was on the House floor, I said, you know, I've never voted against foster kids, and even though the bill was about aged out foster kids, we were asking the community college system to provide potentially free college for a group of young people that, well deserving, you know, no argument there, but how much can we ask the community college system to do? Now, having said that, if this bill is just setting up a task force and you are somewhat willing to sit down and have that discussion to uniformly do something that sounds like you're pretty much doing anyway, maybe that's a different story, and I'll shut up now, but I wanted to get some of that on the record, that I think there's only so many pieces of straw that the community college camel's back can withstand.
Thank you. Chair Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, you indicated that you're a very veteran-friendly college and campus, and I'm just curious, what percentage of your student body population, not trying to put you on the spot here, but do you know what that
I don't know.
Veterans is? Okay.
I do not know.
But I'm, Mr. Chairman, the purpose of my question is I suspect that you probably have a high enough percentage that it could, for lack of a better term, put a crimp in your style there at the community college, where you'd have to provide tuition-free education to a significant number of your student body.
You know, in Eastern Oregon, we have a number of National Guard units that have deployed. I went just a few months ago to the deployment ceremony for an aviation unit that deployed out of Pendleton. So all throughout Eastern Oregon, we have a pretty large percentage of our National Guard men and women that are deployed all the time. This is the reason I'm here today is not to complain about the financial impact on my college. There is a small one, but we're willing to bear that burden. I came here today because I wanted everybody in this panel to know that we're working very hard to serve our veterans, and we're doing it in an honorable way. We are keeping our promise. If it's not precisely with the same exact words that some other groups would like to see, we'll work with them on it. That's not the issue. I just don't want the legislature to walk away thinking that we've been somehow dragging our feet on this waiver issue. I think we've been the leaders on this issue.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
One quick question.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, and I believe you are the leader on this issue, and I wish we could just send you across the state and have you have all the colleges listen to how you've implemented it and move on from there. I don't necessarily know that we need to be involved in it, but here we are, and so we will. But I'm curious, when it kicks into the waiver of death as a result of a service-related injury, is suicide considered service-related? In that, would you interpret that? We have a high suicide rate in veterans, and it's really unfortunate. And Representative Escobedo, the chair, and myself, and several others have kind of joined on a bill, but just so that we can try to get those facts and figures when, the MEs come across this information. But we're also having a hard time directly correlating that and saying this line goes from this date of service to this suicide. But I'm just curious, because of PTSD and MST and everything else that happens, are we looking at suicide as potentially an injury or death related to service?
Chair Esquivel, Representative Matthews, I think the colleges would probably be looking to federal direction on issues like that. But my honest answer is I don't know currently. But I also think these are probably the kind of issues that having consultation with ODVA is helpful. Because I think this is an issue that nationally they're currently trying to look at and work out.
We're all struggling, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your service, too.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah. Now, you mentioned this amendment. You want to amend this bill?
Yes, sir. We've spoken with representatives from the Department of Veterans Affairs and said, there are two changes that we think should be made and that they agree, I believe, should be made. And so we would like to propose amendments in a work session to this bill to deal with
this. This just happened?
In the last couple of days, we had this conversation.
Well, we won't be voting on the bill then. Okay. First of all, Mr. President, I want to let you know that I'm not concerned about you or your college, but I am concerned with other people and their colleges. Maybe they don't do what you do. In fact, it's pretty obvious by reading the information some of them don't. I think you have a high bar and a high standard, and I appreciate that. And I also want to remind you that the Marine Corps is part of the Navy.
It is a proud part of the Department of the Navy. That is very much a separate system.
Well done. I'm going to write that down.
Good job.
I've had a lot of experience in that comment over the years.
I'll tell you what, when I was in Vietnam, we pretty well stuck together because we were around Air Force and Army the whole time. So thanks for your service, too.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Thank you. Director Willis.
Crack about the Air Force. Well, Chair Esquivel and Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, I think the committee's heard very clearly what the issues are here. So let me just say that the Department of Veterans Affairs is looking forward to coming, I hesitate to say this, to a once-and-for-all settlement of this issue so that we have a standard application across the board. And I want to tell you, we're very aware of what's happening at Blue Mountain Community College, and I echo the statement by the co-chair a moment ago that if people would just follow that standard, we wouldn't even be doing this because it would be done. But unfortunately, that is not the case. So the commitment from the Department of Veterans Affairs to this committee and to this body in general is that we will work diligently with the community college system. We concur with the amendment that's going to be asked, which in essence says that the bill is going to be about the community college or the tuition waiver program only. okay, and that ODVA will be consulted during the task force process. And I believe you're going to be very happy with the interim report that we will make back as a result of the work that's done. But most importantly, we will honor our commitment to the dependents of those killed in action and those who are dependents of 100% service-connected disabled veterans. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Director Willis.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you, sir.
We're waiting on, obviously, a amendment to this particular bill, so I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 338A. And anything for the good of the cause? Any comments? If seeing none, adjourn.